When you stand at the edge of the rim at Crater Lake, the blue of the water can rivet your focus and take your breath away. Once your breath comes back and you look a bit more at the surroundings, you might notice those gnarly-looking pine trees. Those would be whitebark pines. They are prominent at both Crater Lake and Lassen National Parks, and they're well adapted to the high elevations of the parks, but not so well adapted to a disease and a pine beetle infestation that is beating up on those trees. Let's hear more about the problems and the prognosis for the whitebark pines. Sean Smith is a botanist with the Klamath Monitoring Network, which keeps an eye on Lassen and Crater Lake and four other national park facilities. Thanks for joining us today in the studio.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
Let's talk about the overall function of what your agency does. So what are the INM networks?
Yeah, so the National Park Service set up 32 inventory and monitoring networks. And what we do is we set a goal of monitoring vital signs, and these are similar to like blood pressure, cholesterol, things you would go to the doctor to get checked out. So what we do is we as an inventory and monitoring program, we set up inventories to kind of get a status of what was in the parks. And subsequent monitoring efforts establish a baseline that we can, through time, track trends or look for abnormalities from past condition.
So, in a sense, you guys are like the physicians of the national parks under your purview. You keep an eye and just make sure you just monitor their health.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Klamath Network keeps track of six locations total. You were saying.
Yeah, so you know, if you think of a clock and Ashland is at the center, we got about 1 o'clock, Crater Lake National Park, and then moving south to Lava Beds National Monument, continuing Lassen Volcanic National Park, Whiskeytown National Recreation Area, Redwood National and State Park. So we also do state parks at Redwood, and then Oregon Caves National Monument. So it's not all just national parks. It's all different entities, and they're managed differently.
So all kinds of stuff to keep track of that go far beyond just whitebark pine.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Our vital signs include, you know, plants, birds, aquatic invertebrates. We also do some physical characteristics, water chemistry. And at Lava Beds, there's a cool program. We got monitoring cave ice.
All right. So if you're looking at aquatic invertebrates, you're also dealing with things like the crayfish in Crater Lake, stuff like that?
We don't necessarily work with the crayfish, but the park has got a great program with lake monitoring. We do just streams. And the outside of the rim aquatics at Crater Lake.
Okay, outside the rim. All right, so let's talk about the things that are right there on the rim, the whitebark pines. I mean, chances are if you've been to Crater Lake, you have seen a whitebark pine. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, you've seen some live and probably a lot of dead whitebark pine, especially on the rim. They get that classic bleached out, like shiny gray look when they've been dead for a while and the bark has fallen off.
So I guess we have seen a fair amount of dead ones, and because that's the first thing that comes to my mind is that shiny stuff. So when they're alive, what do they look like?
You know, they can take really two forms. There's kind of, you know, the classic tree, that upright form, and that's going to be kind of where they're in a mixed stand. As you get higher in elevation up towards the tree line to the subalpine, they take on what you call the Krumholz formation, which the trees actually look like just big shrub fields. Not so much at the lower elevations, but like I said, as you get up higher and they've really become affected by wind and snow, they tend to look more like shrubs.
All right, so more like a bristlecone pine or something. I mean, something at a high elevation.
Yeah, that would be more of a typical look. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So, how significant is the whitebark pine in either the ecosystems at Crater Lake or Lassen National Park?
Yeah. Well, throughout the Pacific Northwest and throughout their whole range, I suppose. Whitebark pine are referred to as a keystone or a foundational species. And this is a species that can have a disproportionate effect on the ecosystem compared to its small population. So you can think of things like, you know, classic keystone species would be the wolf. You know, it has a very dramatic effect on the ecosystem. So things that these trees do locally, they initiate high elevation plant community comeback after disturbance, fire a lot of the time. They increase ecosystem diversity and structure. They can influence snowmelt and therefore a stream flow downstream, and also prevent soil erosion at high elevations. Particularly Crater Lake and Lassen have very loose volcanic kind of recent soils, and those are prone to erosion. And the root formation and the subsequent and the community structure help insulate and reduce erosion.
white bark pine and the problems the species is suffering at the higher elevations. The topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Sean Smith is a botanist for the Klamath Monitoring Network. It's an inventory and monitoring network for the National Park System. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about white bark pines. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email your questions as well to jx@jeffnet.org. Should point out, too, that Sean's giving a presentation tomorrow at the Ashland Library from 3 to 5 p.m. So if you want a longer version of what we're doing here today, that would be the place to see it, the place and the time. So a very important tree to the ecosystem then. And how much trouble is it in?
We're seeing some pretty significant declines. Previous estimates put white bark pine, from Crater Lake at 1% annually, a decline of mature trees. And the data that we're seeing on a three-year revisit schedule, we're seeing around a 3% decline at both Crater Lake and Lassen.
All right. So if you go 1% a year for 100 years, you lose most of your trees, it sounds like, or almost all of them.
Possibly, yeah.
And that's what we're up against, it sounds like.
Yeah, we can't be. And so, there's several things. There's some great restoration efforts going on at Crater Lake right now, as well as this tree is being considered for endangered species status by Fish and Wildlife Service right now. So hopefully the decision will be made whether or not to list that in early 2019.
All right, that was the next question, was is it listed? And the answer is no, not yet, being considered. But if it gets endangered species listing as either endangered or threatened, does it get the full Recovery Act treatment, all the steps that have to be taken under that, habitat for it set aside?
It should, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Historically, I don't know how long ago the Klamath Network began monitoring, but, I mean, have you lost a great deal of white bark pine already at the park?
Well, like you said, when you go to Crater Lake and you look out on the rim, I mean, it's about 50-50 what you see of live and dead, that classic gray, shiny tree. I mean, that's a prominent feature on the landscape now. So, yeah, we've lost a fair amount of the population.
So what is doing it? What are the pathogens that are affecting the white bark pine trees?
Yeah, the two main things that are going against it right now are it's a non-native pathogen, white pine blister rust, was introduced to North America in the early 1900s. It's a fungal pathogen with a fascinating life cycle, which we'll be talking about more tomorrow. Won't get into it, but several different spore stages. It has alternative hosts. It's really a fascinating biologically. But it gets into the trees. It comes in through the stomata of the trees, and it's lethal to the trees. In addition to that, there's a mountain pine beetle, which is native, but with some of the warmer winters we've been having, the natural dieback cycle that these beetles have experienced historically is not there now. So they're able to overwinter, and populations are able to build and ultimately kill trees.
Do you have good numbers on the pine beetle populations? How much larger they are than they used to be?
It's kind of a classic predator prey ebb and flow. So they were quite a bit higher than normal 2009-ish, and they've really declined since. So the data that we're seeing, the last few years we've been monitoring at Crater Lake and Lassen, I've seen, I think, only one or two trees infected with the mountain pine beetle versus, I think we have as much as 16 to 11% of trees that we surveyed from 2011 to 2013 had died from mountain pine beetle, and now we're seeing, virtually none.
Okay, so things are slowing down a bit from the sounds of it. The white pine blister rust, this is what, Cronardium ribicola?
Correct.
When you mentioned it was introduced about 100 years ago, not deliberately, or was it?
I believe it was from Asia, and it was from some pine trees that were brought over and were grown at the University of British Columbia Arboretum. So accidentally introduced into North America through a five-needle pine. So all five-needle pines are susceptible to the blister rust. So locally, that would give us the sugar pine, the western white pine, of course, the white bark pine. And if you get a little bit farther south in the Castle Lake area, the foxtail pine. So all five-needle pines are susceptible. And so we don't know exactly what species it came over on, but, it's here and it's, begin to spread and is more or less, all the way down to the border with Mexico on five needle pines and well into the Rockies. The Rockies have been hit really hard with the combination of blister rust and especially mountain pine beetle in the Rockies.
Sean Smith is a botanist with the Klamath Monitoring Network, keeping an eye on national park facilities in both Oregon and California. We're talking about the white bark pine trees, and he'll be talking about these tomorrow at the Ashland Library at 3. You can join the conversation now. Your questions, your comments about what's going on with the white bark pines, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So is there some double teaming going on here? Is a tree killed by blister rust or beetles, or does it get weakened by blister rust and then finished off by pine beetles, something like that?
Yeah, either one can kill the tree, but you know, we're definitely seeing a little bit of the trees become weakened by the blister rust, and then they can get infected by the pine beetle. Pine beetles really prefer to go after a host that is somewhat weakened.
Okay, so definitely looking for something that's already struggling a bit. I'm still struggling with the concept, though, about, I mean, so there are challenges for the trees, but these are hardy trees that already live in very tough environments. You're talking about how they take on the Krumholtz formation. So, I mean, they're already taking a beating from the elements, so it sounds like they should be able to survive some things. But I guess one kind of survival doesn't necessarily lead to another.
Yeah, they are a hardy tree. And when you see white bark pines at tree line, you know, there's a sort of this, you know, awe-inspiring, you know. These trees are old, they're gnarly, they're very well adapted to deal with wind and snow and ice, you know, rime formation on the trees and, you know, ultimately breaking off branches and suppressing their growth. But, you know, when you're dealing with a non-native pathogen, it's something that they're not adapted to historically or evolutionary. And then the mountain pine beetle, you know, because of the warmer winters, you know, you know, a little more prominent and a little more able to sustain over multiple years than they were previous. Especially, you know, a real cold winter would kill the pine beetles that were trying to live at the higher elevations.
Even so, would you still notice, essentially, you're noticing still a 1% die off per year? Even in the colder years?
I can't really speculate on the year-to-year variations, but just as an overall.
As an average, okay.
Yeah.
And how much, if at all, does the removal of fire from the landscapes in the national forest, national parks in this case, play into the expansion of these pathogens?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the removal of fire is affecting these trees primarily in the form of competition. So at both Crater Lake and Lassen, as you approach tree line, you have both a strong component of mountain hemlock and white bark pine. As you get up higher, the mountain hemlocks drop out. But if we, you know, begin to see some warmer winters and this persists through longer periods of time, you know, that benefits the mountain hemlock and they can kind of start moving up in elevation. And they're a strong competitor against white bark pine. They regenerate quicker, they grow faster, and they tend to really grow in dense stands almost that you can't even walk through. I mean, some of these areas that we're measuring, so we measure all trees in our white bark pine plots, not just white bark pine, but we're seeing hemlock densities that are, it's, you know, like 10 trees per square meter in some cases.
Wow,
so, you know, they're very, very thick, very dense.
So even without pine beetles and blister rust, you still have the possibility of just them being outcompeted by other trees as well, even if they're healthy.
Yeah, specifically in this area, the mountain hemlock, yeah, which is, you know, our data suggests that they're growing faster, though not always significant when we do a statistical test.
So what kinds of strategies are being used to help the white bark pines that are still living?
Well, up at Crater Lake, they've got a pretty great restoration program going, and they work locally with the Dorena Genetic Center, which is an entity of the Forest Service. And so what they do is they identify trees they believe to be rust resistant. These would be large, old trees that have never shown signs of rust. They cage the cones to eliminate predators or, you know, squirrels, Clark's nutcrackers, things from getting in and eating those cones. Then the cones are harvested. The seeds are taken over to Dorena, and they're germinated and they're grown. And when they get to be, I think, about 3 years old, they're intentionally infected with blister rust. The trees that survive and don't show signs are then taken and outplanted up at the park. And then those are believed to be rust-resistant trees, and they can be grown and monitored through time. Another thing that they do is they apply what's called a verbenone packet to large, again, these large believed to be rust-resistant trees, get verbenone on them. And that's a hormone that says to mountain pine beetles, hey, this tree's full. You know, go somewhere else. So it can deter mountain pine beetles from attacking these large mature trees and killing them. You know, and this is like, you know, a good genetic stock tree that we want to keep in the population. And so we can take efforts to mitigate and keep mountain pine beetles off of these trees.
So I'm smiling because the verbenone sounds like it's essentially a no vacancy sign.
Yeah.
To the other beetles.
Yeah,
we're
is.
Full here. Don't need any more here.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the you know, the funny thing to say is, yeah.
So the Darina Genetic Center program sounds like it's very straightforward breeding. Is there anything to the level of genetic manipulation going on, the gene gun thing that scares so many people?
Not that I know of there. I don't believe so.
Okay. How long, once there's a blister rust infection or a pine beetle infestation, does it take a tree to die?
Well, certainly different... different mechanisms will affect death differently. With the blister rust, it really depends on where in the tree it enters. So it's going to enter through a needle. But if it enters through needles on the very top of a tree and far out, it's going to take longer for the fungus to go in through the branch, ultimately penetrate the bole, and begin to, you know, put a stranglehold on that tree. So if the blister rust comes in at the top of a tree, it's going to be much longer before that tree succumbs to death than if it came through on a needle that was at the base of the tree on the bole directly. So it would sort of be like, you know, if... you're getting strangled, you know, if someone grabs your wrist really, really hard, you know, your hand might fall off eventually. But if you're, it's more around the neck, it's, you know, going to be more lethal.
So just a few seconds left, Sean Smith. I mean, is there some hope about the measures that have been taken thus far to try to check the growth of blister rust and the pine beetles?
Well, yeah, we always have to have hope, right, Jeff?
Okay. That makes me feel less hopeful than before I asked the question.
No, yeah, I mean... You know, the natural world is a tough place, and when you get, you know, perturbations and non-native pathogens and things, it's, you know, it's tough. But, you know, we're doing what we can do, and, you know, hopefully, or we'll see what happens with Endangered Species Act and ultimately extra protection.
Okay. Sean Smith from the Klamath Monitoring Network, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.